This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Working Memory. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We need our memory for learning from the time we're born. It allows us to figure things out, like when I toss this toy on the floor, the big person over there picks it up. When I experience discomfort, I have to yell and scream until somebody helps me. The basics. But while we rely heavily on our memory during those early years, we don't seem to remember that time in our lives at all. Why is that? Do those early memories even matter? Jad Slaman looked into that.
The story you're about to hear, I've heard easily 1,000 times. It's my mom's favorite story about me when I was little. It involves these tiny toy cars.
Micro machine. The mini machine, micro machine.
I called her up. It's Micro Machine. She says my uncle Ahmed would bring me loads of these things, got them from work.
He worked at Ford Company.
This is in Detroit?
Yeah, in Detroit. You were maybe 1.5 to 3 years old, and you used to love them.
I lived a simpler life then.
All the time, you play with them. You sit on the couch, eating chips, and counting the cars on the highway, watching cars going and coming.
According to my mom, I would have one of these tiny cars in my hand at all times.
You used to sleep with Abbas, he's our friend.
Abbas would stay with us on visits to Detroit. He'd have to crash with me.
We had only a small apartment, so he will sleep in your room.
Invariably, I'd wear myself out watching highway traffic, eating chips, and fall asleep with one of these toy cars in my hand. And every time I woke up, it would be gone. And 3-year-old me demanded that Abbas had to get up and help me look, even in the middle of the night.
You wake him up at night, you want that car that last was in your hand. If he doesn't know which one, you throw it in his face and you keep telling him, this is not it, this is not it.
I apparently expected Abbas to know which one I wanted without giving him any clues. No make, no model.
Yeah, he would look at tons of cars and he keeps giving you one after the other until you find the one you want, which we don't know which one, but you know it.
In this story, I had toys I liked, things I liked doing. I even had something like a personality, kind of a bratty one. But the thing is, I don't remember any of this. My earliest memories don't start until after kindergarten. When my mom tells me these older stories, it's weird, almost like she's talking about a stranger. This is because of childhood amnesia. It's something we all go through. Emory University memory researcher Patricia Bauer has studied this type of forgetting for years, and she tells me it baffled psychologists basically forever.
You know, they called it for many, many, many years the mystery of childhood amnesia.
And so it went until researchers finally had the bright idea of asking kids what they remembered.
It's so obvious, isn't it? It's so obvious, but yet we didn't do it for years and years and years.
For a long time, serious scientists didn't think toddlers under 3 even formed memories, at least not in the same way older kids and adults do.
But as soon as we started examining it in childhood and we started to see that, yes, children form memories, yes, children retain them, and yes, they forget them, just like adults, just a little bit faster.
Well, actually, a lot faster. Patricia and her team found 3-year-olds could recall something that happened to them when they were, say, 18 months old. And they found if they asked them again at ages between 5 and 7, most of the earliest stuff was still there. But then, after that, there's this steep drop. By age 9, most of it is gone.
Certainly, they didn't forget everything from their past. You know, they're not just like a completely wiped clean slate. You still have, of course, your memories of your family. You know where you live. You know a lot of information.
You still know, okay, I'm the younger child. This is how you tie a shoe. Dinosaurs are cool. But a lot of autobiographical memories, your life story, seems to evaporate.
It's not that children can't learn and they can't remember, it's that they forget more rapidly. And so those early memories that you encoded end up getting lost over time.
Bridget Callaghan is a researcher at UCLA focused on early memories. She works a lot with kids and tells me about one study where children watch 2 adults interact with toys. The adults pretend one toy sucks and the other is awesome.
They were toys we made ourselves. So there was one that was like a fish toy and it made a really fun boing noise. And there was one that was a monkey, and it made a slightly different kind of noise.
She'll see how the kids interact with the toys weeks later. Usually, they remember the cool adults liked the fish toy, how they avoided the lame monkey toy. Eventually, though, quicker than an adult would, they'll forget the scene and choose at random. But Bridget thinks while we forget experiences, they're not really gone.
I think that our memories, and I'm speaking of memories, whether we remember them or not, but these experiences that we have in our life that shape us and have an impact on us, really do contribute a lot to our personalities, so the way that we function as adults.
Bridget thinks early events can still encode themselves in us in unseen ways, leave footprints. You see it in children who were abused or neglected when they were very young. They may not remember any of that, but it can still make a distinct impact on brain structures, even affect gut bacteria. And there's the effect these events have on our internal logic.
They kind of shape our working models of the world, the way that we understand the way the world works and our place in it.
Early events, like a Bess always fetching me those cars in the middle of the night, they can have profound effects on us.
It sounds like whenever you wanted the toy car, he was there to give it to you, and that probably helped you set up this really reliable view of adults being helpful and someone that you could rely on.
Or, I don't know, maybe a Bess is at least partially to blame for some toy store tantrum I threw years later. But okay, so if all this early stuff is affecting who I am now, shaping me, how can it just be completely gone? Why can't I remember any of it? Bridget thinks part of it has to do with language.
When you encode a memory, it's kind of stuck in time, at least in terms of the language that you can use to describe it.
Basically, a toddler's vocabulary is all I had to work with.
And as you kind of develop, you grow, and your language becomes more complex, your concepts become more complex, it actually becomes difficult for you to kind of retrieve those older memories that are stuck in time and difficult to update.
And the other reason is, when you're really little, your sense of self is still developing.
So it's not till about 20 months of age that babies start to show what's called mirror self-recognition.
Another Emory researcher, Robin Fivish, is telling me about autobiographical memories, how we get started making these little bits of life story.
They recognize themselves in the mirror. Oh, that's what I look like. That's me. Which shows an awareness that they start to understand what they look like from somebody else's perspective.
That's step one.
Because an autobiographical memory system is about me, not just about what happened, but what happened to me.
Basically, you need to recognize I'm an individual person, separate from mom and the lamp, before you can start a life story. And Robin thinks step two has to do with stories, the ones we tell about ourselves. It's why researchers think kids begin to really form autobiographical memories only in the preschool years.
So what they learn over the course of the preschool years is through language to tell a fuller, more coherent story. That reorganizes the memory to make it more complete and more organized, and that makes it more durable.
Robin thinks the stories we tell are key to making memories stick, making them meaningful.
We search for meaning in the world, and stories are the way that we create meaning for ourselves, for other people. We understand everything through stories.
A lot of Robin's work suggests that when parents reminisce often, retelling stories over and over again, their kids will end up with earlier, fuller memories.
This is one thing we absolutely know about memory. The more you reinforce the memory, the better you remember it. The more you rehearse it, the better you remember it.
But if that's the case, I mean, how does that explain the complete blanks I have before, say, age 6 or 7? My mom, she's telling these little Jad stories all the time.
You thought like you are watching TV. You didn't know it was a game.
That's one about how it took me a super long time to understand the difference between cartoons and video games.
After 3 years, you realize it's a game and you can play.
I think it could be language at play again, but in a slightly different way than Bridget is talking about. My mom first told that video game story in Arabic before I reminded her our listeners don't speak that.
No, mom, I live in English. You have to.
For me, not only are my earliest memories stored in toddler language, they're also in Arabic. That's what me and my mom spoke. Even today, we usually mix Arabic and English on the phone. I asked Bridget what she thinks. Did all this scramble things more?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it's a really good hypothesis. I think it'd be good to test.
I ask for a mention in the footnotes when she publishes her second language memory study. Neuroscientist Paul Franklin, though, tells me language only explains part of the forgetting. As proof, he points to the guinea pig.
At birth, they're much more mature. They can walk, their eyes open soon after birth. They can support their body weight and walk within a couple of days and so on.
They also can make and retain memories, even as infants. Part of their brain, the hippocampus, is nearly fully developed in utero. In humans, the hippocampus keeps maturing as infants and kids age. It's also where many of our autobiographical memories are stored. So the forgetting, it's actually part of a developmental give and take.
You know, the cost of adding new neurons is that you're going to destabilize stuff you've already stored in the brain. But the, you know, the benefit down the line is that you know, these new neurons are good for making new memories as well.
So the cost of remembering my 20s and 30s might be not remembering my 2s and 3s.
Mama, you were like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. All this you don't remember.
I guess my mom can go ahead and remember for me.
And the mini Legos, you divide them and you play with them. You remember which one is yours. And
for the Pulse, I'm Jad Slaman.
And you never fought over a single leg.